Well, I'll tell you who Donald Trump should want Kamala Harris to pick for vice president as her running mate. There's three people in the running, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, by the way, welcome to the radio program of record, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI for this sixth day of August. Is it just me or is it getting a little darker? Or is that just cloudiness?
Yeah, maybe a little both today. But right, we're in that window where all of a sudden the sun's not up when we are.
Darkness before 9 o'clock.
My goodness, it's the radio legend.
Wait, okay, John, your lips are moving. I can't hear you. Hang on. My hearing's just coming back from the air show here.
Too much Blue Angels.
Seafair weekend.
Blue Angels, Marine Corps, Army. Everybody had jets this weekend in town.
That's right. Anyway.
Amazing Seafair. We'll get to that later, but amazing Seafair. That's all I got to tell everybody for 75 years.
We're going to look forward to that. We're going to look forward at 8:05 to our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest day, word of the morning, rather. It is a four-day trip to New York City over the latter part of the holidays. So you'll be celebrating New Year's Eve in the Big Apple with three friends. So it's not a party for two, it's a party for four.
Very generous. Wow.
And that's going to be a fun time. Anyway, you can take the trip or keep the cash. I'll give you the word of the morning coming up here again in 2 hours' time. But to get back to this, apparently, unless we're being thrown a curveball and she's going to name someone who's not on the list of the final three, we're told that it's getting down to three people. Kamala Harris is going to pick one of three people.
Well, I think it's already been announced, hasn't it? This has just come out in the last 15 minutes or so.
Well, I've heard a rumor.
Oh, okay.
I've heard a rumor.
I'm looking at an Associated Press story that says it's the dude from Minnesota.
Donald Trump should want. Yes, it is. So. Oh, good. I was going to say Donald Trump should want Kamala to pick the governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz.
No T.
Yeah, no, W-A-L-Z.
Yep, Walz.
Because, oh, this is wonderful. Yeah. I had heard that it was going to happen. Perfect. Walz is the governor of Minnesota. He is a blowhard. He's obnoxious. He's extreme. Famous for saying one man's socialism is another man's neighborliness.
Yeah, whoa. That's right. Just a week or two ago.
And and he's also inept. His state is badly run. Okay. He doesn't bring any state into play for the Democrats.
He can't help win Wisconsin or Michigan?
Well, no,
for the Democrats?
Because again, these are Midwestern states where even your liberal Democrats are, for the most part, you know, think about Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, you know, pretty level-headed Democrat is the governor.
That's the book on that guy, yeah.
Governor Evers in Wisconsin, older, low-key, you know, gentleman. Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, different story, you know, outspoken and
I think you called her pretty progressive, or she was the most progressive of some of the ones
the
that
worst
Kamala Harris
COVID
was even considering at one point.
On the lockdowns. But the thing of it is, populism plays well in some parts of the country. In the Midwest, not quite so much.
Okay.
So she goes with this guy who's going to be reassuring to the base.
Okay.
Reassuring to the base, the liberal left-wing base of the party. That's not how you grow the party.
Now, I have a question. Is the decision to pick Walz as significant as the decision not to pick the Pennsylvania governor, Josh Shapiro? Because Shapiro would have really alienated the pro-Hamas left wing of the Democratic Party. So what do you think was going on in regards to that decision-making process for Team Kamala Harris?
I think that Team Kamala Harris wants an attack dog For vice president.
Okay. And then so she doesn't have to be the attack
so
person.
So that she can seem presidential.
Okay. All right.
And so
Walls would definitely fill that role.
And so he'll definitely fill that, but that should be what Donald Trump wants. Shapiro would have frankly overshadowed Kamala Harris. People would have said, well, that's the guy who should be running for president, not her. And Mark Kelly, frankly, I think would have been more worrisome for Republicans. He's a mainstream guy.
I really thought Mark Kelly would be the one that would get selected by Kamala Harris.
His wife is the former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who was shot 5 times, including in the face, that left her partially paralyzed.
I mean, you talk about the idea of having the vice presidential candidate complement what the presidential candidate can't secure or can't do, and that seemed like it was Mark Kelly.
So, John, real quick, as I told you at Seafair, ran into a lot of fans of the show. They love the fact they learned so much here. So, again, if they just tuned in, just a rundown, the name again and why this choice, just so we're on the same page.
Yeah, the main reason for Walls is that when you're running for president, you want a running mate who is willing to attack the other side and who also will be a welcome contrast, kind of fills out the picture. So Kamala Harris is a radical. However, when she stands next to this guy, who, as I said, is bombastic, kind of a blowhard, then she looks more reasonable and more sensible. And so that is what I think the Democrats are looking for. Someone who is on the political left, someone who will be an attack dog, someone who can claim some experience. He spent a dozen years or so in Congress before becoming governor. And you know, he's the guy who helped popularize the whole Republicans are weird kind of thing just a week or so ago.
There you go. Right. Okay.
You know, referred to former President Trump as that bastard and said, won't it be great to see when Kamala wins in November to see Donald Trump, the look on Donald Trump's face that he lost to a black woman. That kind of thing.
Wow. Provocative
that's what he said in a Zoom call with fellow Democrats.
Now, I have to ask you a leading question. Do you think the Democrats have considered their past results when selecting somebody for the ticket from the state of Minnesota?
What's that? Wait, Betty,
did
what?
The Democrats completely forget their past results when they selected someone for the ticket from the state of Minnesota?
Well,
names, right?
Walter Mondale didn't quite work out for him.
Didn't work out twice. Didn't work out as the vice president. Well, I guess he was vice president for what, 4 years?
Yeah, he was Jimmy Carter's vice president.
There you go. And then he tried to run in 1984, right? And he got trounced.
He just got
and
wiped
then
out.
Hubert Humphrey.
And then Hubert Humphrey back in 68, he was the senator turned vice president. He was vice president like Mondale.
Okay.
And he wasn't able to win.
Didn't really clinch the deal.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But here's that comment that I was just telling you about. He said, how often in 100 days do you get the chance to change the trajectory of the world? He was talking to donors on a Zoom call, Democrat donors. And how often in the world do you make, referring to Donald Trump, how often in the world do you make that bastard wake up afterwards and know that a black woman kicked his ass and sent him on the road? That is what helped make him popular. That raised his stock among the Democrat activists around Kamala Harris. So this will be fun. This is the guy you want. He's got a record as governor. He's like Jay Inslee. If you look at Jay Inslee, he's inept. Several problems, you know, with several agencies that are just poorly managed. Again, his liberalism is quite extreme. And, of course, the Democrats, let me make a prediction now before all the predictions start. I predict the Democrats are going to say, oh, he's a latter-day Harry Truman. Give him hell. That's probably what they're going to say.
And the Democratic National Convention is coming up when now, so we can all watch and get our
2 weeks from yesterday.
Two weeks from yesterday.
Okay.
So anyway, that is why I am glad they picked this guy. He doesn't bring any state into play. He's a mediocrity, and he's extreme and bombastic. And this sounds okay to me.
And this wasn't one of the original three we were all looking at, and everybody's kind
of
projecting.
No, he was not one of the originals.
Totally out there.
That's a very good point the radio legend makes. In the original mix, you know, they were looking at Gretchen Whitmer. They were looking at Gina Raimondo, who's Commerce Secretary. She actually would have been a choice that worried me. But again, she also would have overshadowed Kamala. People would have said, well, why is she running as the running mate? What, shouldn't Kamala Harris be the running mate? So Gina Raimondo was quickly pushed off the list. Whitmer was probably seen as too divisive and unpopular within the party. And so it came down to a few basically white male middle-aged to older guys. And it was going to be Josh Shapiro, who hands down would have been their best choice. But again, the Democrats have a problem with Jews. The Democrats, left wing of the Democratic Party, is openly antagonistic to Jews and to supporters of Israel, especially if the supporters of Israel are Jewish. So the same party that brought the first Jew to a presidential ticket back in the year 2000 with Joseph Lieberman, arguably did not pick Josh Shapiro because he is Jewish. I mean, what a long way they have gone backwards. And Mark Kelly would have, you know, had a very impressive resume as an astronaut, senator, the husband of a former congresswoman who was shot by a crazy guy when she was holding a town meeting. If he had left, that would have left two open U.S. Senate seats in Arizona, and the Democrats are worried about losing the Senate. They are going to lose the Senate. The question is, will there be 51 Republican senators in the 100-member Senate, or are there going to be 54, 55? That depends on how well the Trump ticket runs. But there's going to be at least 51. So that is where we start this morning's show. It is great having you out there. There's a lot of other things going on that we're going to be getting into. And your questions, your comments are certainly welcome. Go ahead, call or text your opinions to 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. It is 17 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. A reminder that our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest word of the morning I'll give you at 8:05 today. There's a lot going on. Glad you're here for the ride. Good morning. Go for it, Philip J. Vandervoort III.
Okay, just to kind of dot the T's and cross the I's, we'll talk about the Kamala Harris campaign for president, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. You had gone through it in the last segment. Kamala Harris picking Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as the vice presidential running mate, and then various social media posts yesterday, including this one from the Seattle Times, about the Democrats doing their formal results of online voting by delegates to make Kamala Harris the official nominee so that they can get that in before they actually do their convention coming up in 2 weeks, and they can get that official designation as the nominee for Kamala Harris so that it can meet time deadline requirements in different states to have the right name on the right ballot. So that was something that had basically been accomplished yesterday. Now, here in Seattle, there was a shooting up on Capitol Hill, two different groups exchanging gunfire. Como 4 had some of this story that's worth listening to.
Seattle police say one of the injured victims crashed a bullet-riddled car into the entrance of nearby Swedish hospital.
So this shooting started at Broadway and East Pike there in the heart of Capitol Hill, just a block and a half away from Cal Anderson Park, the old Chop Chaz
Zone. Yeah.
And the Swedish hospital is, maybe 6-7 blocks away, something like that, there off the edge of Broadway. And then Como 4 talked to a bunch of witnesses and neighbors about the shooting. And here's that portion of the story.
Many residents we spoke to just moved here within the last year into a new LGBTQ plus senior housing community nearby and say the issues they deal with are only escalating.
We need help. We need more police presence, you know, whether it be drive-bys or whatever, you know, just to kind of keep an eye out for us.
So that resident of the elderly LGBTQ housing facility wants more police.
There are.
Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. And
isn't that what that person said? Yeah,
first of all, you raise your eyebrows. There's an old folks home for LGBTQ people.
And apparently the residents there, or at least that one, wants more police in Seattle. I see what the problem is now. That person who is living at the LGBTQ housing facility is a Trump voter, right?
The gay man,
Capitol Hill.
Who wants to live on
Capitol
Hill.
Voting for Trump because he wants more police. Okay, I see what's going wrong with this story now.
But no, here's what that shows.
Yep.
It shows just how fed up even liberal Seattleites. I mean, how much more liberal can you get than someone who wants to live in senior housing designed for LGBTQ people on Capitol Hill, and yet they're saying, hey, where the hell are the cops?
Right.
Where's the protection?
Why are there so many shootings?
And by the way,
can we
they
do
have
something
a right.
about this?
They have a right to a safe neighborhood. Yeah. Everybody has a right to a safe neighborhood. So the fact that you get complaints from folks like that tells you just how bad the problem has gotten.
Reality. I need to do a correction from this time on yesterday's show.
Oh.
We were talking about how close that men's 100-meter sprint final was in the Olympics, the American Noah Lyles winning. I inadvertently said that, or I incorrectly said, Noah Lyles set a world record. He set a personal best. So it was a one-man world record. It was a world record for Noah specifically.
We have the smartest listening audience in the North Americas, and we were peppered with corrections from alert listeners who said, come on, Usain Bolt.
Yep. Bob in the 253 and Carl from the 425 area code texted us, pointed out Usain Bolt's record still stands at 9.58 seconds.
They gave the correct. We had several other people who texted and emailed me. Same thing.
So,
come on, John. Usain Bolt. 9.58.
My oversight, my error. And now the record is corrected. Okay, let's do one final one. This one comes by way of Todd Myers, so we can do a little compare and contrast with environmental law and the environmental left and their track record on being accurate about what helps or hurts the environment. Are you ready?
Here we go.
Todd Myers posted, the former mayor of Seattle, Greg Nickels, and Seattle City Light once handed out compact fluorescent light bulbs in a Christmas parade telling kids that Santa was going to die due to global warming. Now...
No, he did. He did. He actually said that the global warming might melt the North Pole.
Sure.
And again, you just shake your head. Greg Nichols, when he started out, he was just going to be the guy who dealt with the basics. He said, you need someone in the city who just deals with the basics. Mayor Pothole, they called him.
That's right.
And he was very popular for that.
For a moment.
And then he started, you know, catching, if you will, climate change fever.
Yeah, that's true.
And he thought that this issue was going to take him to the next step upward in politics.
Well,
it did not end well.
After that historic citation by Todd Myers, he goes on to point out those CFLs, compact fluorescent light bulbs, are now considered a fire hazard and must be carefully disposed of because they contain mercury. And he includes a screen grab that says tip of the week. Tens of millions of compact fluorescent bulbs are still in use today, but are no longer considered safe. CF bulbs screwed into a light base where the bulb is horizontal can lead to the glass portion of the bulb eventually sagging and separating from the bulb base, which can be a fire hazard, even though the bulb still provides light.
In other words,
so you may want to check some of your fixtures
and
see if you've got any of those things laying around or still in use.
In other words, real pollution, not, quote, carbon pollution, which is just carbon dioxide, which is not a pollutant. In fact, it's a building block of life. Sure. It is essential for plant life to have carbon dioxide. But no, we're talking mercury, real bad stuff.
Mercury, real bad stuff.
It is. Thank you very much, Philip J. Vandervoort III. Very instructive. And again, yet another case where environmentalists are telling us to do things that a few years later turn out to be bad for us. Oh, it's 6:30. Kamala Harris has made her first major decision as a candidate for president. She has picked Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate. It had gotten down to Josh Shapiro, the impressive, moderately liberal Pennsylvania governor who is also Jewish. And yes, that mattered. Tim Walz, a more bombastic and more ardently liberal politician, was chosen, it is largely thought, to placate the progressives and liberals. Why the need to placate the progressives and liberals? Because Kamala has started to change her political stances on key issues. Two big ones just last week. She has long been known as someone who believes in government-run and government-controlled, government-dominated health care. She's called for single payer, meaning no private insurance anymore, no private health care anymore. She's reversed that position. She also had come down four square in favor of a ban on fracking. Hydraulic fracturing, which is the means by which we get most of our energy out of the ground. It is also what has helped make natural gas so popular and ironically has helped reduce Americans' carbon footprint as we transition from coal toward natural gas. But the climate alarmists, the climate change movement, they don't like fracking. And she came out four square in favor of banning fracking. Last week, she changed her mind on that one, too. So as she continues, quote, evolving, meaning throwing one position after one liberal position after another overboard, so she can appear more moderate. This guy, Tim Walz, will be there to say, "Oh no, we're faithful, faithful progressives." So that's kind of what's going on there. It makes it easier for her to continue changing her positions if she has a liberal firebrand as a running mate. And if, quite frankly, if you want a liberal firebrand to be your running mate, you don't want a woman who's a liberal firebrand. Okay, you wouldn't want someone like AOC, okay? And you wouldn't want a person of color if you're looking for a liberal firebrand. You would want your liberal firebrand to be packaged as a middle-aged white guy, which is definitely what Tim Walz is. So as I was saying, and I'll have more to say about Tim Walz at the top of the hour, if you're Donald Trump and it got down to Josh Shapiro and Mark Kelly, the astronaut senator from Arizona, and Tim Walz, this guy from Minnesota, Trump, the Trump people should want Tim Walz. They got him. So, more on this. Plus, John Fund, who's been following politics and is well acquainted with Mr. Walz, he'll be joining us at 8:05 to tell us even more. All right. By the way, some interesting real-life results of the initiative that restored police chases in the state of Washington. Remember, police chases were made all but illegal, and as a result, our roads, our highways, become incredibly less safe. We set records in the last 2 years for deaths on the highway, at least in part, because car thieves and others no longer had to stop for the police. They weren't allowed to chase them. Well, that changed with Initiative 2113. That's the initiative that basically repealed the legislature's anti-police chase law. And what's interesting about this is that it was going to go on the November ballot. The Democrats did not want it on the ballot. So they basically swallowed hard and took the hit and repealed their own law. Drove the left wing of their party nuts. But what could they do about it? They said, we can't have this on the ballot. It polls too well. And we don't want our candidates on the ballot with this initiative. So the Democrats voted to make the initiative law. It is law. It just went into effect, and here's the latest about what the new law looks like. This happened out in Thurston County. Motorcyclist riding at over 100 miles an hour on the freeway. Okay, a year ago they would have had to let him go. Now they don't have to let him go and continue riding at 100 miles an hour. They went after him. And here's what happened. Como 4's Mary Nam.
A man wanted on a felony escape warrant is behind bars tonight after leading Thurston County deputies on a high-speed chase that would not have been possible under previous pursuit laws. On Sunday, during routine patrol, a deputy spotted a motorcyclist pull around another vehicle in a no-passing zone and turned on his lights and sirens. The motorcyclist drove for miles trying to shake off deputies but was finally arrested at a trailer park in Olympia.
The reality is for the last couple of years, repeat felony offenders, dangerous people, have their way on our streets and not in Thurston County anymore.
The suspect has...
That's Sheriff Derek Sanders, by the way. Sheriff Sanders from Thurston County. Let's go back to Mary Nam.
7 felonies on his record and at least 15 prior arrests. Prosecutors have until Wednesday to file charges, but the suspect remains in custody on $10,000 bail.
And, of course, you're asking yourself, how many felonies on this guy's record? 7 felonies on his record? What's he doing out there? What he's doing out there is whatever he wants to do, breaking the law, and thinking no one can stop him. I guess he didn't read the news coverage that the police chase law had changed. Anyway, and by the way, the other reason he wouldn't want to stop for the police, there was a warrant out for his arrest because he had been ignoring previous warrants. So good for you guys. And we need, how do I put this in a way that a compassionate liberal would see my point of view? Here's what. We need to provide housing. Housing first for criminals. We need to provide room and board. A place, a safe space for criminals that will also keep us safe. Namely, the penitentiary. And so guys like that belong back behind bars. It's just really that simple. So good for you guys who signed the initiative. Brian Haywood, take a victory lap. I have been telling you Brian Haywood is the most consequential political figure in this state. And by the way, Brian Haywood and John Carlson and Brandy Cruz are headlining the second annual Freedom Fest. It's a big party. It's going to be a lot of fun, and you are invited, and it is free. It's going to be the second. It's going to be coming up 2 weeks from last Saturday. So it's 12 days from now. 12 days from now. August 17th from 4:30 in the afternoon till 8:30. So it when it ends, it's still light outside. It's going to be in Redmond, and it's going to be at Brian's farm. There's going to be everything. There's plenty of parking, plenty of food trucks, plenty of booths, organizations, clubs you might want to belong to, candidates. There will be a few speeches. There's going to be a couple of bands, rock bands, country bands playing. It's just going to be a great time. And there's a play area for the kids with the, you know, the bouncy houses and all the other things that kids love to play in. Anyway, that's all going to be Saturday, August 17th from 4:30 till 8:30. And I would love to see you there. You are very definitely invited, and would love to see you there.
For and there's more, no ticket, no entry fee, nothing. Just show up.
No
and,
entry
and
fee or anything.
Support
they do,
what you like.
They do ask you to register just so they can, you know, plan ahead for here's how much food we need, here's the facilities and everything else we want.
Perfect.
So, again, just to help them plan for accommodating. If you would RSVP, they would appreciate it. Just go online to letsgowashington.com. That's letsgowashington.com. Scroll across the top for events and click on it, and you'll have all the information you need. All right. Our good buddy, Lars Larson, giving you more of the information you need right around the corner as the Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570. Can't wait to check in with my good friend Lars Larson, our noon to three host, about the big news of the morning, at least political news of the morning.
Yeah.
That is that we have Kamala Harris making her first big decision as a candidate for president, and that is her choice of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate.
She made the Death to America pro-Hamas end of the DNC very happy by not choosing the Jewish candidate, and instead going with a guy from Minnesota who considers the rural parts of his state, and he's on tape saying it, mostly cows and rocks. A kind of attitude I think you can find easily in Olympia at the governor's mansion, and certainly in Salem at the governor's mansion, can't you?
You know, it's interesting. You notice that Jay Inslee is outgoing governor, and he's still politically ambitious. He still wants to do things, and he never even made the... He never even made the long list, let alone the short list running mates.
What do you think he's going to volunteer to do? I mean, does he want to be carbon czar, or what do you think?
Oh, no, he wanted this, in the Biden administration early on. He wanted to be either EPA director, interior secretary, energy secretary, or climate czar. And again, he never made the short list for any of those jobs.
Well, see, I think he got beat by Walz of Minnesota, because while Jay got taken for some money during COVID, Walz seems to have the national title of biggest, worst COVID scam in America, losing $250 million. And apparently all of the internal audits in the state of Minnesota say it's because basically the administration of Tim Walz was asleep at the switch and wasn't paying attention. And he's had a bunch of those that have happened. So it was called Feeding Our Future. Apparently it had no controls on how the money got spent. So the total loss is about $250 million. And I don't think Jay's a piker compared to that.
Well, what it all gets down to is that Walz he can be fiery and bombastic with his rhetoric, and he's got a reliably liberal record. So that'll keep the progressives in line as Kamala continues to discard previous positions of hers. But he was also a very mediocre governor. He's lousy at managing the state. So, again, there'll be more that we'll learn, and I'll tell you more about this guy coming right around the corner here, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Just 1 hour, I will give you our word of the morning that you'll have almost an hour. You'll have until 9 a.m. this morning to text the word that I give you to our regular call-in text line, 206-421-5757. The trip this week, which we'll hold a drawing for after Friday evening, is a 4-night trip to New York to celebrate New Year's Eve for you and 3 friends. So it's not just for a couple. It's for a party of 4.
Man, trips are getting better and better, John.
New York.
All the decorations are set up there, and the fun, and
absolutely, absolutely. Anyway, the welcome back theme, because you were gone yesterday, recovering from a marathon.
Are you talking to me? I can't hear
weekend.
You quite yet. 75 years of Seafair, John, and we did it. All things says one word: amazing. And I'm born and raised here, and I've seen a lot of Seafairs, but this was a granddaddy. I keep hearing record number of people attending. And again, I share with you, and you know, we have Sally, who's our general sales manager here,
yes,
at the station.
Sally Selvey. Uh-huh.
She got up to the tower, and in the middle of working with the Marine Corps and a jet flying overhead, she's tapping on my shoulder. I turn around, I'm going, what are you doing here? I didn't realize it was her first Seafair. I would love to get her review of what she thought of seeing the hydroplanes, the vintage hydros we had there, the Pan Pac, the Notre Dame, and the Wahoo,
so
and
how
of course
did,
all the jets.
How did this Seafair compare with, say, the Seafairs of the 70s and 80s?
A big part of it is the fact everything's got more expensive. Very, very expensive. I mean, I was referring to a lot of things on the PA with everybody there, which we were hooked up to the log boom as well. I mean, you just got to think the fuel alone for a lot of these jets, for the Blue Angels, for Fat Albert, for the C-17 that we had. I told you... we had Renee Finley from Bellevue flying that big C-17 cargo jet, WSU grad. What a cool thing to watch. It's just everything's got more pricey. So, again, people wonder about the tickets or whatever. And security was great. Very impressed. But everybody had a good time. And it was fun to see the families on the beach with the little coolers and the kids in the water when the boats were not racing. And then when the boats race, you got to get out of the water. Log boom was healthy. Nice sunny weather. It was great. It was fun.
Oh, wonderful. And it's good to see the crowds coming back.
Yes.
Because they had taken hits over the years. So
yeah,
that's
and, you know, people get it from tradition and stuff. And, again, and to David Williams and the Unlimited Hydroplane Race Boat Museum to bring back the Pan Pac and the Notre Dame, the U-7, which I was in fourth grade when that was a champ. And people saying, what's with the Thunderbolts? And my sound engineer, Danny, niece from Fremont. And I said, Danny, if you're home right now, you would hear these boats. He goes, oh, come on. I go, this is why they were called Thunderbolts. The new people that were there, Mark, why do the Jets have to be there? It's so loud. I said, every town, every small town has their summer festival. 75 years ago, they planted this thing. They got boat races. We got the Blue Angels here in 72. That opened it up for an air show. And it's just, this is our fun with all the military. And, John, to work with Naval Air Station Whidbey, with the Growlers in town, United States Marine Corps with an FB-35B. We had the U.S. Army. We had the Golden Knights doing the skydiving.
Yeah.
And then Boeing. I told you Boeing, they had the 777X. Make that the 777X. First debut for the public to see that.
Did a flyby, right?
But the maneuver and the pilot on that thing and what he did with that jet, I thought back to our friend, who was it, Ted, back in the day?
Johnson?
Yes.
The pilot Johnson?
Tex Johnston.
There we go.
Yeah, and he rolled
the barrel
prototype.
On the 707?
Roll in front of...
Right over the course, wasn't it?
The CEO of Boeing, Bill Allen, who had a couple of guests who were thinking of buying Boeing jets, and when he did the barrel roll, they said, we'll take it.
Yeah, we just sold a lot of planes. But anyway, to Boeing and to the pilot who I met earlier, I didn't know what he was going to do for a routine, but oh my gosh, people are like, I have never seen a full-size jet do something
roll
that he did over the race course with the tight turns and the side. If there's video, look at it. It was unbelievable, but just a great
seafarer. To think about those piston power boats that Mark was just referencing, how far away you can hear them.
Yeah.
Think about whenever a jet, particularly a military kind of jet or plane, all of a sudden is maybe not normally flying over your area, but then all of a sudden you start to hear that engine noise, and you're like, this is not a commercial jet that's flying by my house.
No.
Look, and you start looking around and go, wow, how close is this?
We talked yesterday. There was an op-ed in the Seattle Times by the Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility guy claiming, you know, they're just way too loud. It could hurt your hearing. You know, these Blue Angels have got to go. Not only that, they contribute to climate change, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, anything that's fun, the Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility wants to do away with. Mm-hmm. But I read this piece, and then, you know, what you're saying, do people understand that Seafair used to be a lot louder for a lot longer than it is today?
Perfect perspective there.
Back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the Thunderbolts, they got that name because of their noise, not their rooster tails.
The Allison and Griffin engines
from old World War II airplanes.
I lived in West Seattle.
Sure, I was on Queen Anne.
You could hear the hydros doing their rehearsal runs, their practice runs. You know, from Seward Park, you could hear them in West Seattle, the boats. That's how loud they were. And that's before the races. That's just doing the dry heats. That's just doing practice runs.
Sure.
So, and it went on that way all week long. And so, you know, when people complain about noise, there's two ways to deal with it. The first is say, it's only for a week, or it's only, you know, now it's only for a couple of days.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
And the other is, look, just plan to be somewhere else.
Yeah, we do our best, too, with the Air Show Committee and Air Command. We tell people, get ready, it's going to get loud, get the kids, cover the ears.
Yeah.
And again, this is no easy thing to do, guys. Think about it. We've got this air show in the middle of a city of Seattle. So our Air Boss Air Command, we're working with Boeing Tower. They're the bosses for us to clear 5 nautical miles of airspace to do the show. We're in communication with SeaTac Airport to divert incoming flights and departures. We work and consider it to Everett Payne Field. We work with Renton Airport. John, we were even connecting with the Woodland Park Zoo saying, loud jets coming up, may want to take some of the animals indoors for a little bit. That's how far we go to just kind of help everybody out and all the celebration for one big weekend. Now it's 75 years. And compliments to the 2,700 volunteers of Seafair. They were pulling triple duty, seafair.org, all ages. They need volunteers for next year, and good job, everybody. We're still in a city park at Genesee, and I hear garbage pickup, cleanup, packing out. You did a great job.
All right. Okay. So, again, until next year, Mark Christopher has held virtually every position. What is as a pirate?
Cabin boy Christopher Days. People remember the water skiing pirate. That was me.
Yes. Anyway, he's been part of the torchlight parades, every aspect.
Five entries, milk carton derby.
All right. So the big news of the morning is that Kamala Harris has selected Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, to be her running mate. Okay, so who is this guy? Why would he be her choice? Well, in a nutshell, Kamala Harris is, and this shows you just the utter disdain that the D.C.-based Biden team, or the Biden-Harris team, have for the average American voter. They're going to run her as a moderate. Now, how do you make Kamala Harris look moderate? Will you stand her up next to someone who is a hardline progressive lefty? And that would be Tim Walz. We'll get to his record in a moment, but you probably have noticed that the same woman who was judged the most liberal member of the U.S. Senate in 2019, the year before she ran for president, or even though, frankly, she was running for president throughout 2019, she dropped out before the Iowa caucuses. She was doing so horribly. But she was the most liberal member of the Senate, more liberal than Bernie Sanders, more liberal than Elizabeth Warren. So now that she's running for president, she is starting to shed those earlier positions. So she had endorsed socialized medicine, single-payer health care. There is no more private health care. Everyone in medicine works for the government. And she had been very clear-cut about that. Not only socialized medicine, but socialized medicine for illegal immigrants. She's now reversed that position. She didn't give a speech laying out the reasons why she was wrong and why she had adjusted her position. She just had press aides put out a short two-sentence statement. She no longer holds that position. As if that's supposed to make it all go away. Okay. And then she's also changed her position on fracking. Hydraulic fracturing. The climate, this is the issue for the climate change movement. So she is like crossing a huge line. And again, she was on record repeatedly saying she supported a ban on fracking, and now just a two-sentence statement. She no longer holds that position. It's because she wants to win Pennsylvania and hydraulic fracturing and fossil fuel exploration is very popular in Pennsylvania. So how do you run as a moderate without losing all of the progressives? The left wing of the party is the most spirited, most organized, most vocal, and they're pretty wealthy, too. A lot of high-tech money on the political left. Well, here's what you do. You get a liberal firebrand to be your running mate, and then you run as a moderate. Now, Tim Walz will be trying to, you know, say, oh, a small-town football coach, you know, served in the Marines and then ran for Congress and then has been elected and then reelected governor. But he ain't no moderate, okay? He has signed the Protect Reproductive Options Act just last year, which made Minnesota the most liberal state in the country when it comes to abortion. Abortion is now legal in Minnesota until the moment of birth. Not only that, it expanded taxpayer funding of abortion on demand. It removed the requirement that life-saving care be given to infants that are inadvertently born alive after surviving an abortion. That's how militant and, frankly, how mentally ill this abortion statute is. Even infants born alive during an abortion are not guaranteed life-saving medical care in the state of Minnesota. He also signed a law that could remove a child from the home of parents if they do not provide, quote, gender-affirming care, close quote, to their child who insists that he is a she or that she is a he. The bill allows Minnesota courts to take custody of children whose parents have refused to subject them to gender-affirming treatments. By the way, you can lose your child for not allowing them to receive puberty blockers. Puberty blockers are now illegal in Great Britain. Puberty blockers are now illegal. They didn't used to be. They are now. And in the state of Minnesota, if you don't allow your kid to get puberty blockers, they'll take your kid. Or they can take your kid. So, this is just, you know, an idea. And the other thing is that he's got a record for being incompetent, just at the job of governing. The country's biggest financial scandal during COVID, $250 million. That happened in his home state of Minnesota. No state has ever gotten taken to the cleaners to the tune of $250 million, which per capita, on a per capita basis, makes Minnesota the state that had the worst fiasco. And there's several other examples as well. But why would she pick someone who is incompetent and extreme? Because he's also bombastic, and he's, you know, already referred to Trump as that bastard. And so, again, that can make her look more statesmanlike while he is going scorched earth on Trump and J.D. Vance. That's the thinking. We'll see if it works. But that's what you need to know about Tim Walz that you probably won't be told on the evening news, the network news, and probably won't be reading about in the paper. That's what makes the show indispensable. That's the real Tim Walz as people see him in Minnesota. It's coming up 21 minutes after 7 o'clock. The John Carlson Show, Philip J. Vandervoort III around the corner with a social media sweep. A lot going on this morning. We are the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, 26 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. Philip J. Vandervoort III with the social media sweep. What's going on, Philip J.?
I want to try and get to an Olympics item here in just a moment, so I'm going to plant this seed with you and Mark and for the listeners as well. Who would be your favorite Olympian or maybe even Olympic team of all time. But we'll get to that in just a moment, because we're going to talk about the selection on the Kamala Harris ticket for vice president. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, candidate at one point for U.S. president. He has posted about the selection of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as the Kamala Harris running mate. And DeSantis posted, Harris-Walz, most left-wing ticket in American history. Minnesota was ground zero for the BLM riots of 2020. Harris egged it on, and Walz sat by and let Minneapolis burn. Over at the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the big daily newspaper in Minneapolis-St. Paul, their post says, Harris selects Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as running mate, aiming to add Midwest muscle to ticket. And I don't think of Midwest muscle when I think of Tim Walz, but we'll set that aside for now. CNN posted about Tim Walz's selection. He has been a leading driver of Democrats' attacks on Trump, saying that about Walz. And that was one of the things you pointed out here to open up the show.
He's, again,
as well.
He will be her attack dog so she can be more statesmanlike.
Yep. Doesn't have to do the mud-slinging, dirty work type stuff.
He will be the lefty while she looks more moderate. Again, this is the stage that they're setting.
While she
here.
Reverses her record on all the left-leaning things she's done down the line. Over at the Olympics, we have a unique situation involving an athlete born in Louisiana but not competing for the United States, competing for Sweden, who just broke his own record in the pole vault. The man's name, Armand Duplantis, or Duplantis, if you spell it out phonetically.
Okay.
And so he's going to win the gold medal, becomes the second man to repeat as pole vault champion. He breaks his own world record.
What is it?
It was 6.25 meters.
Wow.
So I don't have that immediately converted into feet, but that's got to be
like
what,
20 feet.
20 feet.
So he's back-to-back Olympic champion. But now everyone's wondering, what? Why is it that this guy born in Louisiana ended up representing and competing for Sweden? And I don't have that answer quite yet. And then I'll dig that up. But this post came up yesterday, and I thought, what a great question. Who is your favorite all-time United States Olympic athlete? And the social media handle I follow that asked this is called Super 70 Sports. And they just do a lot of reminiscing type stuff of the 70s and the 80s.
Sure.
And they posted, the handle posted a picture of then Cassius Clay, now Muhammad Ali, 1960, Tokyo, right? So what would your answer be?
Go ahead, John, you first.
Or do you want me to give out mine and then you can roll with yours?
Well, let's see. I've got two teams and then two Olympians.
Ah, okay.
The teams, Summer Olympic team, I'm going to go with the UW crew, 1936.
Boys in the Boat story.
Boys in the Boat
Great
story.
Answer. Great answer.
Thrilling. Thrilling. Winter Olympics, 1980 men's hockey team.
Bingo, yeah. A couple of people pointed that one out.
For Olympians, Jesse Owens.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is going to come out of nowhere for a lot of people. A high jumper named Dick Fosbury, who in 1968 completely revolutionized the high jump with what became known as the Fosbury flop.
And it was a Northwest guy, wasn't he? Or was he from
Oregon?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Did you have one, Mark?
Apollo Ono. In fact, once upon a time, he was in the hallway at the station I worked at. He actually walked by and said, Apollo. He goes, hi, who are you? Just a nice guy. But the other thing about it is life in the family didn't change.
Yeah.
Yuki Ono, down at 4th and Bell with Yuki's Diffusion Hair Salon. And for a while, you guys know I was a Ride the Ducks captain. I would tour by with the people. I'd slow down. I'd say, everybody, Apollo Ono, champion, Olympics, here's Dad's shop. And Yuki would always come out and just wave. Nothing ever changed. It was still the family operation. And I went, how cool is that? But Apollo Ono, what a guy. Who's I think he's now 42, Apollo.
Yes.
Still young.
And very important. Not related to Yoko.
True. Yeah,
and speed skating.
No,
I mean,
Yoko
we all learned about that.
Yeah, he basically broke through and made that sport.
He and Eric Heiden were the greatest speed skaters.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like Jesse Owens, and then the other one I would have thrown out was 400-meter hurdler Edwin Moses, because he had a streak of like 110 races where he never lost.
Yeah.
Unprecedented.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. That's a good one. Oh, my goodness, look what time it is, ladies and gentlemen. 731, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. When we come back, Nancy Pelosi talks about her relationship with Joe Biden now that he has been escorted from the stage. All right. Interesting what she had to say. By the way, 2024 will be known among some people anyway, as the year Billy Joel retired from entertaining.
That just doesn't sound right.
Billy Joel finally retired after, what was it, 150 sellout concerts at Madison Square Garden? Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Residence.
And he played here. Yeah. But he made it clear it was his farewell tour. Yeah. At least he's practically a performer in residence in New York City at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. So maybe he'll keep doing those concerts, but he says he's done touring.
Once upon a time, his wife, Christie Brinkley, supermodel that many of us grew up with.
That was one of them. Yeah. Okay. 24 minutes to 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. So Nancy Pelosi has been given much of the credit, i.e. blame, among Biden supporters, of which there don't appear to be a whole lot left, for basically getting him off the stage. And after his disastrous debate on June 28th, Team Biden realized they couldn't keep the charade up anymore. I mean, it really was a stunning act of putting power over country for the people around Biden, that they were perfectly willing to present this fiction that he was still pretty much all there. Yeah, moving a little slower, but still, you know, he's got it upstairs. No, he didn't, and hasn't for a while. Anyway, after his debate performance and then a couple of follow-up interviews, which just reinforced concern about him, and it didn't help that he introduced the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, as, quote, President Putin, close quote, a number of Democrats, well-placed Democrats, and major donors began the pressure campaign for him to leave, and it succeeded. And over the weekend, Nancy Pelosi made an appearance on CNN with Dana Bash, who was one of the panelists for that debate meltdown of Joe Biden's. And one of the things that Dana Bash pointed out is that the three prominent members of Congress who came out and called on Joe Biden to get out of the race were not just allies of Nancy Pelosi. They were close to her. They were friends. Zoe Lofgren, a fellow longtime House member from California, Adam Schiff, who was her close ally going after Trump. And she said, you know, is that really a coincidence? And she said, oh, for heaven's sake, of course, it's almost insulting to them that you would think they were doing this for me, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of people think it all got down to Pelosi, Schumer, and Barack Obama, with Hakeem Jeffries, Nancy Pelosi's successor, tossing in on her side the side of Biden leaving as well. So with that behind us, here is what she had to tell Dana Bash.
Have you spoken to President Biden since he dropped out?
No, I have not.
Do you hope to?
Yes, I hope to.
Yeah,
we're all busy.
Is everything okay with your relationship?
You'd have to ask him, but I hope so. But he knows. Look, I have loved Joe Biden, respected him for over 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. this is just one day after she said this on CBS.
such a consequential president of the United States, a Mount Rushmore kind of president of the United States,
Are
want
you
to
really
know what
saying
comes next.
That he belongs up there on Mount Rushmore.
This is Leslie Stahl not believing what Nancy Pelosi is saying.
Lincoln and Joe Biden.
But you got Teddy Roosevelt up there, and he's wonderful. I don't say take him down, but you can add Biden.
Okay, what's that about? It's about trying to keep her, their end of the deal that, hey, if Joe Biden left, he would be seen and treated and feted as a hero. And if he didn't, well, Mr. President, it's just going to get uglier, and there's going to be growing opposition, and more people are going to be calling for you to step out of the race. You cannot win anyway. We've gone over that. I've presented the data to you. And she did, by the way. She went to the White House and said that it's not a question of whether he'll lose the presidency. Of course he'll lose, but he's also going to take down Congress because Trump will win in a landslide. And so that is where Pelosi comes down with his ridiculous comments. He belongs on Mount Rushmore. A consequential president. Consequential how? That he basically erased the border with Mexico? Consequential how? That we had the highest inflation since Jimmy Carter was president? Consequential how that his withdrawal, his chaotic, embarrassing, disgraceful method of withdrawing America from Afghanistan reassured Vladimir Putin that he could make a move on Ukraine? Which he did. So consequential how? Doing more than anyone else to drive up the national debt? If he was so consequential and he belongs on Mount Rushmore, why the hell did you push him off the stage? Why did you tell him he had to go? And you did. It's because he's not consequential. He was a failure. He was a failed president. He got a couple of things through because Joe Manchin tossed him his vote, which made Manchin look ridiculous and sealed his fate. He would have lost re-election if he had run again. And so at the end of the day, Joe Biden should be seen as one of our worst presidents, maybe our worst since Jimmy Carter, and maybe our worst including Jimmy Carter. But this, all of these hosannas about Biden, and like I'm saying, everyone, the Democrat establishment is saying wonderful things about Joe Biden right now. Okay. When they lose in November, they're going to forget all the nice things they're saying about Joe Biden, and they're going to blame him for the Democrats losing in 2024. They'll say if he had left 6 months earlier, we could have had a wide open, you know, primary battle for the nomination, and we could have run our best candidates instead of what we got stuck with. They'll say he left at the 11th hour, and so everyone had to just coalesce around Kamala and, you know, did the best we could with what we had in the time remaining. I guarantee you he will get the blame when Trump wins this election. You know, assuming that Trump wins the election, I have said before and I'll say again, especially with this a new ticket now with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz on the ticket. Harris can't win. Kamala Harris cannot win. But Trump can lose. And we got a little preview of how he can lose over the weekend. If he talks about the economy, if he talks about the border, if he talks about how safer the world was for the U.S. and everyone else when he was president, and then highlights Kamala's extremism with her own words, which are there in abundance. The media are being very quiet. They're kind of trying to keep the seal on a lot of the stuff, but it's already getting out. I've played a bunch of it here on the show. The media are not showing anywhere near the interest in her previous statements that they are, say, of J.D. Vance. They love going over his old statements, which is fair, by the way, but they don't like going over her earlier statements. All he has to do is focus on those things. Instead, he goes to Georgia, and he spends part of a rally in Georgia yelling and complaining about the Republican governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, who happens to be very popular and who won the state of Georgia by like 8 percentage points, defeating Stacey Abrams and ending her career. Why is he yelling about a Republican governor? Complain about a Republican governor. How does that help him win the presidency? So like I said, Kamala can't win, but if President Trump gets sidetracked from the issues that unquestionably help him, rising prices and the economy, the border, and a safer world, and Kamala's extremism, you talk about those four things, you're always winning. You talk about this other stuff, and you start to lose. So talk about what helps you win. It is 7:47, Boeing time on the John Carlson Show. 7:47, the commute continuing, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We're about 15 minutes out from your word of the morning for our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest. You want to be listening for it. It's a great trip this week. Morris, John Fund of formerly Wall Street Journal Editorial Board, now with NationalReview.com, going to be telling us a little bit more about the life and career of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who's now going to be, of course, Kamala Harris's running mate. This should be an interesting conversation. In the meantime, let's stick with what's local here. You've heard about the long-term care program. You're paying for it. Mandatory long-term care insurance program, the only mandatory long-term care insurance program of any of the 50 states. You're paying a payroll tax, 58 cents for every $100 you earn.
Only state? We're the only one.
Only state that has this. It only has a maximum lifetime benefit of $36,500 to associate long-term care costs, okay? Here is what caught my attention. They were giving an update to state senators and others on the Long-Term Services Commission. And even though this is a pass-through program, they said that of the $1.3 billion they expect to collect in premiums, meaning your payroll taxes, the department needs to keep 25%. Karen Kaiser, Democrat, Des Moines, questioned an Employment Security Department official about the administrative costs. He said, we're retaining about 25%. She said, Liberal Democrat, how much? 25%? He said, we're keeping about 25%, yes. She said, but wait, administrative expenses? You can't be getting 25%. That seems excessive to say the least. She said, ESD is a pass-through agent, not administering anything. DSHS administers the program. And then the director chimed in and said that ESD, the Employment Security Department, keeps up to 25%, quote, as a cushion in case of unexpected expenses. So they're keeping a cushion of 25% of the money you pay from mandatory taxation. Again, there's an initiative on the November ballot to make this program voluntary and get rid of the mandatory requirement that you belong to this program or pay for it. You can't wait for this initiative to vote yes. Vote yes when this initiative is on the ballot and get rid of the mandatory program here. Well, supposedly, by the way, we should point out that after one of the worst days of the stock market in quite some time, the Dow took a 1,000-point tumble, lost 2.5% of its value.
Just don't look at your 401k for about 12 hours. You're okay.
The S&P futures rose slightly, gained about 150 points this morning. We'll see if that trend continues throughout the day. But the concern was that we were going to, that this was the beginning of a perpetual slide. What helped was a rebound in Japanese stocks. Boy, are they volatile. They lost 12% of their value. Worst day since 1987. And then a day later, they had their best day since 2008. They gained back 10.2%.
Wow, that's big.
So they were down 12.4% and then came back 10.2%.
People say in the industry, don't react quick. Give it 24 hours.
So, yeah. So, again, it looks like this may not be an inevitable slide. It might be more of a roller coaster. You know, we will see. All right. We have our Take the Trip, Keep the Cash contest, ladies and gentlemen. It's a trip to New York City, 4 nights over the holidays. Here's what I'm talking about. It's 4 nights for you and 3 friends. So that's a party of 4. 4 nights in New York City over the New Year's Eve, the latter part of the holidays. So that could be a lot of fun.
Time to get lost in New York, just like a movie that comes to mind.
If you don't want to take the trip, you can keep the cash. That's $3,000. All right? So here is your word of the morning. You have until 9 a.m. to text it to 206-421-5757. The word is museum. Museums, some of the best museums are in New York City. So museum, M-U-S-E-U-M. Again, M-U-S-E-U-M, museum. Text museum to 206-421-5757. You're automatically entered into the contest. We got a regular daily drawing for $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card, steakhouse gift card.
How generous to take 4. And all the decorations, Christmas, Rockefeller Center,
it's all,
ice skating,
it's all still
there.
Up. Yeah.
It's all still there.
And it is a, New York is a magical place. I'm about to talk to John Fund, who's from New York, who could testify to that. It's a magical place during the holidays. Really, really is beautiful. And you got the ice skating, Rockefeller Center and all that. But thank you, Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores, which is a great resort, by the way, Quinault Beach Resort. Right around the corner from Ocean Shores, the main drag. All right. Museum is your word. Museum, 206-421-5757. All right. What do we need to know about Tim Walz the governor of Minnesota that the media aren't going to be in any hurry to tell us. Well, someone who will tell us, frankly, the whole story. Not just one side of the story, but the whole story is John Fund, who knows more than anyone I know about politics everywhere in this country. He's constantly visiting every corner of this country. Good to hear your voice, John Fund. How are you this morning?
Amused.
Okay. All right. Kick us off. You've seen many, many running mates over the years. How does Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, strike you?
He is not the issue. The issue is the person who picked him, Kamala Harris. She managed to turn this into a spectacle in which she was flip-flopping around from one candidate to the next, one special interest to the next, pressuring her. She clearly had three or four front runners at given points. And when it finally came down to it, she took the path of least resistance. The question she had to answer was, am I willing to anger my party's base, especially its progressive base, one iota? And the answer was no. It says more about her than it does about who she picked.
Now, the media are saying, oh, this guy, you know, small town kid, grows up to be a school teacher, football coach, spent a generation in the National Guard before he went into politics. Someone, you know, with a common touch and kind of a no-nonsense, brusque way of talking like Harry Truman. How?
I'll give him this. He didn't enter politics until he was in his 40s. That's good. He had some life experience outside of politics. But he has not spent one day, not even one day, earning a private sector paycheck. He has never signed the front of a check. He has always been on the public payroll. He's been a teacher union official in his local school district. He is a complete dyed-in-the-wool red diaper baby. And to give you an example of that, he showed up at the White Dudes for Harris event on Zoom the other week, and he went through the proctology exam of all the progressives there, and he was asked, you know, well, what about socialism? And he said, well, one person's socialism is just another person's neighborliness.
Yeah, we have that cut here, if you don't mind us playing it. This is Tim Walz on that Zoom call. Boom. There you go. That sums it up pretty well. When you say red diaper baby, John, are you referring to his parents?
Oh, yeah. His parents were far left.
I did not know that.
Look, this is a guy that Bernie Sanders endorsed.
Okay. All right.
Now, as for social issues, he goes way beyond even someone like Sanders. 2 years ago, John, he signed a bill requiring every public school in the state of Minnesota to stock menstrual and period products in boys' bathrooms. The products must be available to all students in grades 4 through 5, both girls and boys' bathrooms.
They have tampons in fourth grade boys' bathrooms?
Yes.
In Minnesota, because of legislation that he signed? And supported.
Yes.
I know that they have the most liberal abortion law in the country. I mean, it's one thing to be pro-abortion rights, you know, Roe v. Wade and whatnot. I get that. But Minnesota went further, abortion up until the moment of birth?
NBC News has a piece saying if you ever want to know what a trifecta, where the Democrats have the governorship and both houses of legislature, what a trifecta can do for progressive causes. Number one example in the country is Minnesota.
Even more than Washington. Wow.
Even more than Washington. Well, first of all, Minnesota is one of the highest income taxes in the country. Secondly, it is way lefter on social issues. And as for budget, in the last two-year budget of the Minnesota State Legislature, spending went up 38% in one two-year session. Taxes went up $10
billion. So they raised taxes $10 billion and raised spending 38% in one two-year budget cycle?
Yes.
Whoa. I mean, when we here in Washington say that much, then you know that it's through the roof.
Governor Inslee would be uncomfortable with Walz's record.
That's really saying a lot. You'll notice Jane didn't make the short list or even the long list.
Well, I will say this. Tim Walz is a good speaker. Jay Inslee has never been known for keeping an audience awake.
Fair point. Okay, so let me bring up the other aspect of this, which is Pennsylvania is much more of a swing state than Minnesota. 18 electoral votes. They have a much better governor, more respected governor, Josh Shapiro. Did Josh Shapiro not get picked because he is Jewish?
I'm not going to look into the heart for someone's motivation. I would have to say that it was certainly part of the package that the progressive left protested against. Mm-hmm. They fought Shapiro being named tooth and nail. They had other excuses for it. School choice, the fact that he, doesn't demonize Republicans. But they also, of course, brought up Gaza, and they brought up the fact that he had volunteered on a kibbutz and done some work for the Israeli army. I'm not going to say it was anti-Semitism. I'm going to say anti-Semitism was part of a toxic stew that circulates in the Democratic Party's left wing.
Yeah.
And it was a factor, if not the major factor.
Well, let me, a little historic perspective, because someone that I knew and met and admired, and someone you knew much better than me, in 2000, the Democrats named Joseph Lieberman, senator from Connecticut, as Al Gore's running mate. And that was the first time, I believe, that a Jew was on a national party ticket. And they actually, didn't hide from it. In fact, they called attention to it, that this was, someone breaking through.
And it was actually a brave move because Joe Lieberman was an Orthodox Jew.
Yes.
He couldn't campaign on Saturdays. He couldn't go anywhere. He had to climb stairs, not take an elevator, not deal with technology. It was actually a very brave move on his part.
And I, they tried to say, he's there for you 24/6. they were, again, it took some bravery to do that, and I think he helped the ticket. But the bottom line is, look how the party has changed regarding Israel in general and Jews in particular. I think myself that the Democrats have an anti-Semitism problem in their party, because I think it is riddled throughout the progressive left wing of their party.
Well, I think that it's actually a bifurcated situation. I think there's some anti-Semitism, there's some anti-Zionism, but I also think there's just some pure pro-Palestinian sentiment, and not pro-Palestinian in the sense of the Palestinian people, but the most extreme wings of the Palestinian governing movements in the Middle East. Look, most Palestinians that I know, especially those who emigrated to the United States, want nothing to do with Hamas, want nothing to do with Hezbollah. Look what Hamas has done. It has failed to govern Gaza, and instead it went and slaughtered anyone they could find within sight of their borders. So it is a very, very toxic situation because, look, Israel has made mistakes. I can criticize Israel, but it is not the instigator of this current conflict. That was the people who came across and killed 1,300 people.
And broke a ceasefire to do it.
Yes.
Absolutely, that is the case. That's why I wanted to call attention to it. Let me, before we break, let me suggest also that the reason she went with Tim Walz is that Kamala Harris wants to campaign as a moderate. She's been discarding her progressive positions. One way to mollify
John, I disagree with you. She has not discarded one of her progressive positions. She has never said anything about abandoning, you know, gun buybacks or fracking or anything. An unnamed campaign spokesman has put out short statements on her behalf saying that she does not have this position, does not have that position. Kamala Harris doesn't say anything that's not on the teleprompter. Yeah. She herself has never said, I've changed my mind on anything yet.
Well, that's true. Her campaign is saying it on her behalf. But, yeah, you're right. She herself.
Campaign officials are saying it.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're day 15, and she still hasn't done an interview.
What's an interview? What do you mean? Well, Joe Biden never did interviews, so why should she?
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Biden never was interviewed by anybody.
I don't know if they can do a second straight campaign from the basement. But
watch them try.
But my take here is that Kamala wants to campaign as a moderate, so that means throwing some red meat to the liberal base. And she also wants to campaign in a statesmanlike tone. So let Tim Walz be the attack dog, which he relishes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And Josh Shapiro wouldn't deliver the goods on that.
Exactly. John Fund, great analysis. It's always wonderful having you here, and I appreciate you making the time on short notice to join us today.
Absolutely. There's lots more to talk about next time.
Oh, you got it. All right. It is 20 minutes after 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandervoort III with his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists on The Commute with Carlson. Good morning. Oh, man, listen to this tweet. The last time Kamala Harris and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz teamed up was when he allowed rioters to burn down half of Minneapolis, and then she raised money to bail them out. Oh, kind of harsh, but
it's a quick question.
Frankly, kind of true. Did refuse law enforcement assistance to quell the rioting in Minneapolis, and she did encourage people to give to a bail fund that was – there were no peaceful – demonstrators arrested. They're violent rioters, vandals, looters, arsonists. Those were the people arrested. Yeah. So, again, harsh, but kind of true.
Well, I think that would be a fair question for the brand new ticket for the Democratic Party. Will the Harris-Walz campaign be like that characterization, or is it going to be different? And I'd be fascinated to hear how either one of those two candidates on the ticket would respond.
Yeah. 15 days in as the Democrats' candidate, has Kamala Harris answered a single question from the news media in 2 weeks' time? And if not, why aren't the media complaining? Why aren't they complaining?
Yeah,
they've been shut out for more than 2 weeks.
You'd think that one of the networks or one of the big cable channels would be trying to get that exclusive interview and pursuing that, but
I mean, they go out of their way to bring up, J.D. Vance's past statements, which seem uncomfortable or sometimes contradictory, criticizing Donald Trump and the like. But I haven't heard him bring up a single Kamala Harris. Now, I have. Because that's That's out there. These are things that she actually said, and she said them when she was running for president, when she was serving as vice president. So it's not like in the distant past. Anyway, with that said, Philip J., I know you've got a scintillating social media from socialists on the way.
Yeah, and let's start with a congressional campaign update here in the state of Washington. KVI's Ari Hoffman has relayed this video. It's posted on social media on Twitter/X, and it's posted by somebody who's a conservative. But the person bumped into, whoever posted it, bumped into candidate for Congress, Emily Randall, out of Bremerton, Kitsap County. Mm-hmm. Emily Randall's currently a state senator, Democrat, state senator, Democratic Party state senator, running for Congress, the 6th District. This is the Derek Kilmer seat. And so the conservative person happened to be at, it looks like a street fair in Tacoma, and bumped into Emily Randall and seemed to say, oh, hey, you're that one that's running for that office, and kind of, you know, played a little bit naive, and then kind of asked an open-ended question of Emily Randall, saying, so if you get to Congress, what do you want to do? Sort of open-ended, general question. Here's how Emily Randall, candidate for Congress, responded. My mistake. It was more about specifics on gender and Title IX stuff. Activist Supreme Court. So ask that question about protecting Title IX for women's participation in sports and so forth.
No, it doesn't.
But Emily Randall kind of shifts it on over to, well, this is why we have to do Supreme Court reform.
No. It's the opposite of inclusion. What they're trying to do is shut women and girls out of contention for scholarships and opportunities by allowing boys and men to compete. And all you have to do in a Washington State high school, in public school, to compete on the girls' team if you're a boy is simply say, I identify as female. That's all you have to do. No counseling, no transition service, nothing. You simply have to make that statement, and they have to let you compete against girls. And it's unfair.
Emily Randall added one more item after that about what she would like to see with the U.S. Supreme Court.
Last time they tried to pack the court was in the 1930s, and it blew up in FDR's face.
There you go.
But again, what do you expect? This is Emily Randall, who is actually campaigning. She's campaigning. Help her make history as the first LGBTQ Hispanic Latina to be elected. Well, excuse me, you're supposed to be applying for a job to help the people, not asking them to help you, quote, make history by, you know, being an identity politician who gets elected to an office. So I don't think that pitch is going to work all that well. Not with voters in general, it's not. It's 31 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It's 8:37 on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Big announcement on Saturday, August 17th. So 12 days from today, you are invited to the second annual Freedom Fest. It's happening in Redmond. Again, in Redmond at Willowcrest Farm and Stables. That's Brian Haywood's spread out in Microsoft land, suburban Microsoft land. Plenty of room for lots of people, and there's going to be lots of people there. You should be one of them. There's going to be bands, country and rock bands playing. There's going to be ample free parking. There's going to be, in fact, the whole event for you to get in is free. Lots of organizations, lots of booths, lots of areas for the kids to play, including a whole playset areas being set up for them. Some speakers. It's just going to be a celebration of freedom. And it's after the primary, so see the winners, the ones who prevailed, and let them compete for your vote. If, by the way, you are not registered to vote, they will have a voter registrar there for you. So you can register to vote at Freedom Fest. For more details, just go to letsgowashington.com That's letsgowashington.com. All right. Pramila Jayapal was among the first members of Congress to issue a statement. She loves Tim Walz, the Minnesota governor, as Kamala Harris's running mate. Says it's, quote, yet another exciting moment for Democrats across the country. Together, the Harris-Walz ticket will continue building on our momentum, bringing together the entire Democratic coalition. But I'll tell you who doesn't like it. Wow. Van Jones, CNN liberal commentator, said that in choosing a mediocre, extreme governor in Minnesota, Tim Walz, over the more respected Pennsylvania governor, who's also got 18 electoral votes in a swing state at stake here, Kamala Harris was caving into, quote, some of the darker elements in the party. She said this minutes ago on CNN.
Here's the challenge you've got in this party. And, you know, people don't want to talk about it. We got to talk about it. On the one hand, you have a lot of young people who are concerned about Gaza. You have a lot of Muslims and Arabs and others. They have not felt seen by the Biden administration. You start hearing that genocide joke. That was building. That was building. And so those folks needed to have a candidate that they could feel comfortable with. This helps them in that regard. But you also have anti-Semitism that has gotten marbled into this party. You can be for the Palestinians without being an anti-Jewish bigot, but there are some anti-Jewish bigots out there. And there's some disquiet now, and there has to be. How much of what just happened is caving into some of these darker parts in the party? So that's going to have to get worked out. It's going to have to get talked through.
Whoa. I wasn't expecting that. Again, that's Van Jones, a man of the political left, who is excoriating the extremism in the Democratic Party, the anti-Semitism that he says is unquestionably there. Let me, again, I don't know if I could play the last 15 seconds of that clip. Let me give it a shot here.
Here's the challenge you've got in this party.
Okay, here's what Van Jones is talking about. And I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but bottom line is the Democrats have to win Pennsylvania. They have to win Minnesota. Excuse me. They've already got Minnesota. The Democrats have had Minnesota for 50 years, since 1972. Okay, but they have to win Pennsylvania. Trump won it in 16. Biden took it in 2020. They have to win Michigan. Trump won it in 16. Democrats took it in 2020. They have to win Wisconsin. Again, same story. Trump in 16. Democrats in 2020. Josh Shapiro almost certainly would have delivered Pennsylvania. So the Democrats could have more or less, because Josh Shapiro is a very popular governor in Pennsylvania, they could have more or less said, okay, we've got Pennsylvania. Now we can aim more of our resources, volunteers and campaign cash, to getting Michigan and Wisconsin. So why would they go with the governor of a state that the Democrats already have? And continue making Pennsylvania a question mark? And now, if anything, there might be a little bit of resentment that Josh Shapiro got dissed to here. what could have motivated them? And that's why I asked John Fundin that why I continue to believe. I think the Democrats have essentially a left-wing veto on people like Josh Shapiro because he's Jewish. Well, he's Jewish and he supports Israel. If he were an anti-Israel Jew, which you don't see a lot of, but they're there. They're out there, especially in academe, in higher education. But Josh Shapiro is a Jew who supports Israel. And that probably was why he's not on the ticket. Now, if you're a Trump supporter, this ain't bad news. As I said, the worst choice for Donald Trump, for Republicans, would have been Josh Shapiro. Josh Shapiro, who, by the way, paid a wonderful tribute to Corey Camporitor, the retired fire chief who was shot and killed at the Trump rally that almost took the life of President Trump as well. He paid a wonderful tribute to him and spoke with his widow and had the flags flying at half staff for Corey Camporitor in Pennsylvania. He's very much a Democrat, but again, he's not a scorched earth, obnoxious lefty. And this was Kamala Harris having to choose. You know, do you say no to the extreme wing of your party or do you cave in? Well, you just got your answer. She caved in, which is great news if you're a Trump supporter. This is not bad news for Trump country. So that is where we find ourselves.
So, John, debate time here. Maybe you're thinking J.D. Vance against our
president. Oh, this will be a fun debate. And mm-hmm. I don't think J.D. Vance is even remotely reluctant to mix it up. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, Tim Walz is not only an extreme, politically extreme, he's also incompetent. He's also just a poor manager. So he's extreme, he's incompetent, and he's kind of bombastic and kind of a jerk at times. So, my guess is J.D. Vance is probably, yeah, that sounds good to me. Now, there are Democrats who say many of the same things about J.D. Vance, so we'll see. But I myself do not have a problem with Tim Walz as Kamala Harris's running mate. I understand her strategy is that she thinks Tim Walz enables her to run as a moderate, which she is not. And a person of, you know, more moderate tone and presidential bearing, which also is not something you associate with her. But with Walz as her attack dog, it makes it easier to run that way.
Certainly making a lot of material, too, for Saturday Night Live.
Oh, my. Yes. Maya Rudolph is already in wardrobe.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. It's 48 minutes, 12 minutes to 9 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Are the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI, a reminder that KVI's Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest is ongoing right now. You have until 9 a.m., 7.5 minutes, to text the word museum. That's museum, M-U-S-E-U-M, museum, to 206-421-5757. You do that, you get a chance to win a $50 Daniel's Broiler Steakhouse gift card. And you qualify for an end-of-the-week drawing for a fabulous 4-night trip to New York for you and 3 friends. So you have airfare and hotel for you and 3 friends. 4 people, 4 nights celebrating New Year's Eve in the Big Apple. So don't miss that chance. That's our friends at Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores helping us there. Again, our co-sponsors, Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores. Great place, by the way. And a reminder that come Friday, gasoline prices at one service station, will be rolled back to the national average. It's about 80 cents less than the average price of gas here in Washington. That's going to be at the Shell gas station in Burien, First Avenue South. It is a special event, gas back rollback, to build visibility and awareness of Initiative 2117 to strike down the Climate Commitment Act's gas tax. The carbon tax on gasoline would be rolled back and gas prices would come down. They'll be coming down for 2 hours on Friday, again, in Burien at the Shell gas station, First Avenue South. 146th and First Avenue South in Burien. And of course, while we're talking about Let's Go Washington, I will be one of your MCs for the Summer Freedom Fest. For more information, just go to letsgowashington.com. That's letsgowashington.com. Click on the events tab. It's going to be Saturday, August 17th in Redmond from 4:30 to 8:30. It is free. Live music, food trucks, vendor booths, politicians, bouncy places for the kids to play, country and rock bands, and it's free. Check it out and have a great rest of the day.